Welcome to the Classic Cult TV Club, where we watch cult TV.
Okay.
Classic Cult TV Club.
So, we need to confirm one really serious thing. Jeanette has news about people that listen to us.
Yeah, she was saying. Is this what you were saying to me?
Yes. And they are big fans of this, what we're doing today. So.
Which is why we're doing fans.
For the fan.
Yep.
For the singular fan. Bruce, we're talking to you. All right,
so I'm not the only one who listens to this? Is that what we're saying now? Yeah. I thought it was just me.
This is really sad that you're our only fan.
Only listener.
Yeah, I think me saying...
Only listener doesn't even like the show.
I'm thinking more... I was also thinking you said the term only fan. Might be a bit sus.
That's okay, because Lisa doesn't even fall into that character.
Yeah.
Not even an only fan.
You know what the really weird thing is? Like, I was saying, I was listening to the Captain Planet one. I'm like, Cass, you sounded fantastic. You were on point. You were like my highlight of the episode. You were so great. And sometimes I'll listen to the episode and there'll be a joke or something. I'll crack up laughing and go, shit, that was funny. And it's me. She's a funny woman. I'm the funny one.
That's great.
And you know what? I'm the only one who thinks so, because I'm the only one who listens.
Angus does the same thing, but he does it in real time. He'll drop a joke and then go...
Funniest.
And you're like, why is that so funny? Or he'll do it in his head, start laughing, and I'm like...
Only sometimes I'll decide to tell the joke afterwards. I'm like, that was funny, but it's just for me.
Do you ever do that thing where you'll think of a joke and you don't even get it out and you're just losing yourself laughing, and next minute everyone's just standing around going, what the f*** are you doing?
I've recovered enough from the laughter before I start telling the joke. So I laugh beforehand, so it doesn't interrupt.
There's something really awesome about being able to take a step back and being able to listen to episodes from an outside point of view and appreciate them in the same way that I appreciate other podcasts. So
I get to that point by about the
Yeah.
I'm sort of beginning to listen to it.
I've got to say, when Jeanette's editing and she's slashing through minutes and minutes of dialogue with a big axe and just going, shut the fuck up, Lisa. I will neither confirm or deny.
The editor's secrets.
Shut up.
Okay. Okay. Welcome to the classic.
It's great. It's so good. I'm sorry.
The candy man can because he turns you into a meat pie.
If she was here, this dogs. Sorry. Yeah,
she needed
the candy man.
Hurry up, Justin. Come on.
Welcome to the Classic Cult TV Club. Welcome to the Classic Cult TV Club. Okay, damn it. Welcome to the Classic Cult TV Club, where we watch cult TV from 20 years ago and before. And today we're here with Angus.
Hello.
Baylor.
Hello.
Lisa.
Hey.
And Jeanette.
Hi.
Why is that Justin? So sassy? Bro, are you okay?
Has everybody been awake since 2 a.m. here?
Yeah.
It's been a very big weekend for me. This is like catharsis. Coming out like a primal scream.
Oh my God.
Okay. One last time. Let's go.
I think that's good. I think we're up to Cass.
Go on.
We've done it all.
And it's action.
And I'm Justin. And we're here to watch Peep Show. And we're watching Season 2, Episode 4, which is University Challenge. Is that right?
Yes, that's
right. And this was your selection, was it?
Yes, my selection.
Okay, so what's Peep Show about?
Well, first of all, I've never watched it, so...
So why did you select it then?
Because it is a cult classic, enormously popular. Uh-huh. It's about two fat shares.
So for academic
London.
Reasons, then?
No, it's supposed to be one of the funniest shows of the century.
Is it not? I thought it was a sketch comedy show.
No, it's a sitcom.
I thought this was showcased every year at Christmas time.
Oh, there's a scene from it.
No. Like, there's this really big tradition. Like song and dance at the end of the year. It's called
Auld Lang Syne.
No, Yogmas. No. And so the Yogg's cast hosts like it's this really big thing either. And they do the no, you're right, it's not called that, I'm wrong.
Yogg's cast, what is this?
Yeah, they're just a whole heap of gamers and they host the University Challenge. That's what we're watching, right?
Oh, yeah.
The University Challenge is like a TV show in the UK.
I thought it was from, oh god, I forgot my own joke.
Young Ones.
Same TV show.
I thought it was known for Fatal Bus Crashes.
We don't really have an equivalent, game shows, like kids' game shows for primary schools, where there are kids from different primary schools and they compete.
There used to be one run by the Top Gear guy.
Which one? Annoying one?
No. Richard Hammond.
Yeah.
Used to do something similar.
Oh, Centrinians! The one where they...
No.
No? Okay.
That's Centrinians.
Or is it the Lena and Woodley episode where they...
Oh, that one.
This is the crux of all of that comedy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah, nice.
On the actual University Challenge, Miriam Margles was the first person to ever use the F word on BBC.
Oh. Of course she was.
On University Challenge.
On University Challenge. She was an actual contestant representing a university. She got a question wrong and immediately, swore in response. They muted it, but you could... she enunciated the word very strongly. No, they just cut the audio out. There was no beep or anything. They just cut the audio out because it was the first time it happened. They didn't know what to do.
So what's it about, Kelly?
So this is... So basically, favourite comedians and writer, David Mitchell and Robert Redd. It was their first show, I think, where they were very... Oh, really? That's what made them famous?
Right.
I have no idea who these people are. You'll recognise them.
David Mitchell's from Jeanette's other favourite show, Upstart Pro.
Yes. He also is a writer and he writes very funny, clever satirical articles. Recently put out a book called Unruly, which is a great view of English history, which I can really relate to. So I'm a bit of a fan. The show was created by Jesse Armstrong, Sam Bain and Andrew O'Connor. And, of course, Jesse Armstrong is now very well known because he was behind Succession.
Oh, okay.
So Jesse Armstrong's gone on to bigger and bigger things, who's involved in The Thick of It as well, I think.
Yeah.
So he's been involved in a few very big name series now. So he's quite famous and well known. The series was one of Olivia Colman's early works.
There's a lot of actors that kind of got their start on Peep Show. Yeah.
This is their first show, Mitchell and Webb.
I think their first major show, at least.
Or at the very least, if they had a show before, it would have been their sketch show, The Mitchell and Webb Look, which has a lot of classic sketches that I've been floating around the ether forever.
I think that Are We the Bad Guys is the amount of times I quote that and no one has any idea what I'm talking about.
It's just a good quote in reality.
Are We the Bad
Guys? The whole sketch is just brilliant.
Some of the sketches.
We have skulls on our uniforms.
And on our hats.
Yes. From what I can see, the Mitchell and Webb thing...
What was earlier?
Came out in 2001, but they had People Like Us, Fun at the Funeral Parlor, I won't mention that one, Urban Gothic, Bruiser, Comic Act.
They've done a couple of, like,
It looks like there's been quite a bit
Mitchell
beforehand.
The Mitchell and Webb situation in 2001 was 2003.
Wow, so this was broadcast from 2003 to 2015. So it's pretty long-running, isn't it?
It was really long-running.
It didn't have huge audience at the time, but it had a very strong fan following.
It's the English version of It's Always Sunny, really. It's always had that kind of underground kind of comedy. It's got its little niche, and it's been on ABC for yonkers, and I think I've picked up episodes here and there that I've watched but I don't know what order they're in. I'll watch one and it'll be really recent, and then I'll watch one and it's like, oh, hang on, what's going on? This is, several years earlier.
So you've watched it before?
I have watched it on occasion on ABC 2. I find it fits into this kind of comedy part that I'm not a fan of, like that embarrassment comedy.
Yes.
And I get really uncomfortable. So things like in American sense, that Meet the Parents, the UK, yeah. The Office, where you just kind of get a bit.
Towers.
Yeah, the Office you get that really, was English.
No, like the UK one versus the US one, where the UK one has
Lisa was making a distinction.
I was making the distinction. The comedy in the UK version is very much that embarrassment, cringy humour, and I find that really uncomfortable.
Does that
not
mean
something
that you weren't a fan of Boosh, the Mighty Boosh?
I like Boosh, but I didn't love Boosh. I think I loved some of the characters and things like that. I think David Mitchell's really good at that kind of cringy embarrassment. He's that kind of actor where he kind of in character where he gets into these embarrassing situations and you just go, no, why are you doing that? Whereas other people go, oh my God, he's doing that. I just go, I can't watch this anymore. So I struggle with that.
They did a TV series called Back most recently, I think, together. It's in an English pub in England where Reb's character is smart, slightly dodgy character that comes back to the pub that he was fostered for a few weeks there, and Mitchell's character's inherited the pub because his dad's died, and everything he does is just you would hate it. It's total cringe comedy, and he just digs himself deeper and deeper in. His situation gets worse and worse and worse as the series progresses.
And and I'm the same, like Meet the Parents specifically, but a lot of Ben Stiller stuff's that same thing where he does it, something about Mary, there's funny bits about it, but then a lot of the stuff that Ben Stiller does, it's just like, no, because I empathise with it and I don't want to feel like that. I don't want to be that embarrassed. So, so I'll be interested.
Is that what Mitchell and Webb is, the cringe comedy?
Peep Show's got quite a bit of that.
Oh, Peep Show.
Mitchell and Webb is...
It's more skits and sketches and stuff. They kind of get themselves into these situations, and I'd be interested to know what this episode's like, but there's been a few that I've watched, and even Olivia Colman's character, she ends up kind of spiraling in a couple of episodes, and you just go, what are you doing? Why are you choosing to do this? It drives me nuts. So this will be interesting.
She serves as a love interest for the characters.
Yeah.
She's very different in Peep Show.
Angus, have you watched this before?
No. I've heard of it, definitely, but I've not seen any. I've seen so many clips from the Mitchell and Webb that I wouldn't be able to identify what was a clip from this and what was a clip from the...
You've seen the turkey clip.
Christmas turkey. I don't know. Yeah. Cannot tell you.
Baylor, have you seen this before?
No, I have no idea who half these people are.
Baylor's still playing catch-up on the cast.
Oh, yeah.
Just working out who everyone is.
I know who David Mitchell is, and he's very funny. I like him. I don't know who anyone else is. She's been in a lot.
Olivia Colman.
She's been in tons of stuff. I have no idea who this lady is.
Is that Olivia Colman?
She's in the first Matt Smith episode of Doctor Who. She's
in The Simpsons.
Oscar nomination, Olivia Colman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the Five
She's
Doctors.
In Fleabag. She's a grandmother in Fleabag. Okay. Oh, she's in Les Mis.
Stepmother.
There's a TV show of Les Mis?
Oh, it would have been like a...
Disgusting. I have to watch it. She was in the classic Adventures of Thomas the Tank Engine.
Yeah, there's more Thomas and Friends up there.
What on earth? She's in more Thomas the Tank Engine?
Why is she focusing on Thomas the Tank Engine? She's been in all of this stuff.
Yeah, Baylor completely skipped past Murder on the Orient Express.
She's in more Thomas the Tank Engine. She's in Thomas and Friends.
Yes.
She's in Thomas and Friends in 2015. Thomas and Friends in 2014.
She must be a recurring character. I didn't realise there was that many female characters.
She is!
Thomas the Tank.
She's Marion!
Oh, is that the one of the little rail carts?
Yes!
Yeah, see, I remember my Thomas.
Okay, so she started her Thomas
and... Marion and Annabelle were the rail carts, weren't they?
She's in Arrietty.
Ah.
She voices Homely in the UK version.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's in Doctor Who.
She's the computer in... Oh, which one is it?
She's
Mitchells?
In Skins.
No one else has watched that but me a million times with my
She
kid.
Was even listed in the cast. Oh, yeah, she was Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz.
I've been round the station a few times myself.
Oh, yeah, nice.
That's one we need to watch.
Is one we need to watch.
I think we do have to do it.
My goodness, she's been in... Black Books? She was in Black Books?
Yes. Oh, very briefly.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And The Office. Yeah, okay. She was in this show called The Mitchell and Webb Situation.
Yeah.
I didn't even know this person existed, and she's been in a lot of Thomas the Tank Engine. Sorry, there's a joke here that you guys are laughing at, but in reality, I love Thomas the Tank Engine, okay? Yeah. I like trains.
Oh, that's what...
I like trains.
Yeah, yeah. Angus and I...
Yeah, no, Baylor is autistic. Yeah.
But yeah, I love trains. Yeah. Sorry.
But I do have to say, one of the best mashups I've ever heard in my life is Thomas the Tank Engine theme song spliced with Back in Black by AC/DC.
Yes. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
You know what I hate about Star Wars is train hijacking.
It's one of the things I hate about sci-fi in general.
They won't make the edit.
They did a train heist in Firefly too, and it's just as dull to them.
Train hijackings.
Can I segue back to Peep Show? If we can go back,
don't talk about dinosaurs.
Okay, I'm not talking about dinosaurs. They were.
Don't mention the dinosaurs.
It's not a tram.
Which is hilarious. Because Robert Webb, the other individual that you don't know from this show, who was in Doctor Who, was in the Doctor Who episode that had dinosaurs. It was dinosaurs on the spaceship.
David Mitchell, yes.
Was he the dad?
No, he was the robot.
There were the two robots.
Dinosaurs on the spaceship. They played the robots. Yeah, they played the robots that were dumb and dumber.
They were going to have a tram in the series because it's filmed in the suburb of Croydon in South London.
Next favourite, which has actually, a tram. Is a tram.
So they were going to incorporate the tram, but they ended up not doing so.
So one of the things that I do like about Peep Show is that it's called Peep Show because it's all done through point of view.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
The camera work is all point of view camera work.
Oh.
So they'll have a conversation between two people and they'll be showing someone. So it will be like that. You know?
Oh, no. Not with cringe comedy. No, thank you.
Exactly. Yeah. Just another reason to put yourself into the body of
So uncomfortable.
That, is this a psychological experiment?
Yeah, it's a psychological horror.
Let's find out, shall we?
No, thank you.
But they'd say that that's what makes it different to space, because they're quite similar in some ways.
Yeah.
Similar in concept.
Cassandra, have you watched this before?
I've watched a few. I want to say it's similar both to Lisa in the fact that I just, some of the cringiness and some of the misanthropicness, I think, might have aged it enough for me to not want to watch any more of it. But yeah, I think it's just not my vibe. It does feel like this was made in the early 2000s. That makes sense, because it definitely feels like all the characters are misanthropic and unlikable, and that definitely feels like it would have been of its time, but now I've kind of not wanting to watch that kind of stuff anymore. Yeah, I think if I watched it at the time, I probably would be appreciating it more, but I watched a few episodes and I was like, I don't mind not watching the rest of this.
Yeah.
It's because it's not my thing. Yeah, I don't want the cringe comedy in it. I don't want the misanthropicness of all the characters. Yeah, like the whole...
They're just all very messy, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're very messy and flawed, which UK comedy does really well.
Yeah, but it also gets to a point sometimes where it's like everybody's shit and like, I don't want to watch that kind of show.
Yeah. You'll watch shows from other countries and it's like, oh, but they're a little flawed, but they're human and we love them anyway and we love them unconditionally. It's UK comedies, it's like, no, these people are really flawed and they're not people you should be around.
Yeah.
Isn't it basically Always Sunny? I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like It's Always Sunny has a real kind of UK sense of humour sometimes with what they do, because I've never seen any other US shows do it.
Mm-hmm. I think the producers of that were going to do a US version of Peep Show on stage.
So, not surprised.
Yeah.
It has a very similar vibe.
Mm.
So, Jeanette, you haven't watched this either?
No, I haven't. I've seen a lot of other Mitchell and Reb in other things. Yeah. But I haven't watched Peep Show, and I thought, I'll wait until we do it in Cult TV Club, and then I'll watch it. So I probably will watch it, because I do like everything I've seen of Mitchell and Webb.
Yeah. So how did you pick this episode?
I just Googled which would be a good episode. I wanted one from the early series.
Yeah.
So it was season 2 or 3, and I had a couple listed, and Justin had season 2 at the ready, so, okay, University Challenge from season 2 then. The other
Nine series.
From season 3 or Dewying from, they were just listed as...
I'll be honest, like, just with the basic understanding of University Challenge, I think this is a good one to pick just because it is kind of like the basis of a lot of great shows and, like, comedy shows that aren't entirely based on cringe comedy. And it sounds like there's straight man, funny man.
Yeah, and... but it's also the straight man is very pathetic and thinks he knows more than he does. And he's trying to show off how smart he is, that kind of thing.
Oh my god, that sounds so much like Leno and Woodley. It's not even funny.
I guess Leno and Woodley is an Australian sort of very similar situation.
Leno and Woodley, I think, came out before.
Yeah, 1990s.
Yeah, that was 90s.
We've
already done Leno and Woodley.
I know. That means that this is a ripoff of Leno and Woodley.
If you watch an episode, I'd be curious for you to think how much it is like Leno and Woodley.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
But it is the flat sharing sitcom. It's a classic going right back into the 70s, I think, the first flat share sitcoms in England especially. Because it's, you know, you've got two people that are not necessarily compatible compressed into a very small space. So it's a very easy source of comedy.
And they're kind of friends by convenience, not because they actually like each other.
Yeah. It's really interesting because that is how a lot of comedians kind of live their lives for the longest time as well, is not being able to afford anything and end up bunking up with their other comedian friend. Just deal with this and what you write about what you know. So... You write about the other one being an absolute tool.
If we were to...
But you don't know which one's writing about which.
I mean, this is purely The Odd Couple, which is what... When did the original Odd Couple come out? Was it the 1950s? 1960s?
No, I think the Fairly Odd Couple... Fairly Odd Parents.
No, The Odd Couple. No, The Odd Couple. It was a movie with... Is it Jack Lemmon and Walter Matthau? It became a TV series in the US. It's a bit of a standard trope.
Attempts to make this into something in the US, but
But then again, they've done every single series in the UK.
It wouldn't work. And honestly, when they did the US Office, they spent the first season trying to be more like the UK one. The US audience can't deal with that cringe humour.
It's that
they had to pivot away from that cringe humour to be able to make it succeed.
Yeah, or at least the mainstream. Like, it's plenty of weird stuff, but they don't get shown on NBC. They get shown on Adult Swim. They get shown on FXX.
Yeah,
they get shown on HBO. So
It's Always Sunny was and still is very underground by comparison.
Yeah.
They've had a longevity almost because there's this little target audience that they fit into.
Yeah.
And it's also tapping into
the similar market to like South Park and that sort of thing. Mm. But unlike those series of ilk, it's not intentionally horrendously offensive in the same way that terrible program like Drawn Together was. But it's also, I think, instead of South Park, it doesn't hit each other head with their opinions about what things should be.
South Park doesn't have the cringiness in that sense as well. Not like this where you kind of go, the main character is doing something that's kind of reprehensible and you should feel bad, you know?
It's not like they're reprehensible and you laugh because they're getting away with being reprehensible.
You don't laugh with them, you're laughing at them.
Mm. I think it's easier to be able to draw that disconnect.
Yeah.
Which is interesting about English comedy because clearly they're trying to force emotion upon their viewer, whereas you're not trying to force emotion onto the viewer in the US or Canada or anywhere else in the world. You're trying to escape, I guess, the realism of the world.
Well, Succession was apparently unusual in the US in that. Again, none of the characters are likable. It didn't fit either in comedy or drama. No one's quite sure what it was.
Yeah.
And I guess Jesse Armstrong was bringing his English style of writing into the US.
Yeah.
But it just hit a nerve, probably because of the subject matter.
But, you know, whenever I've seen it marketed, I've not watched it, so, but it's very much a drama intrigue with a little bit of comedy. Yes. I've never seen it being promoted as a comedy.
No, it's not comedy, but...
I think the closest I've seen it being done is Arrested Development. That definitely has that kind of cringiness to it.
Yeah.
You've got your Michael, he's that straight guy, and you go, all of these people are the worst, and then you root for Michael, and that's what I found it so harder in the later seasons, when you go, oh no, he's just as bad, he's just self-righteous about it. So then you start feeling cringy and uncomfortable because you're like, no, he's bad too, you know?
And also for Arrested Development, they're throwing everything. So it's not just cringe, it's every kind of humour.
Yes.
So it's not a complete slog through unlikable characters doing horrible things.
I think Succession is cringe, but cringe drama, not cringe comedy.
Yeah, I haven't watched it to be able to know.
Yeah. I have read reviews.
This, I think, actually hits all the buttons of the English cringe comedy called Loudermilk. I really like it. It's fantastic.
And see, that's really dry, dark comedy. I don't laugh out loud. I kind of go, oh yeah, that's quite clever. You know, like yeah. Thing.
But it's also everybody around Loudermilk is so just like Loudermilk's flawed, but everybody else is super duper flawed, and you're seeing their flaws through Loudermilk already being flawed, and theirs seem way worse by comparison. Yeah. It's really well written, similar to Fleabag and the other one that the main writer of Fleabag wrote. Yeah, Fleabag was fantastic. But she wrote another one where they lived in...
Not the share housing thing.
Yeah, where they all lived in the hospital. Yeah, that was fantastic as well. But that kind of comedy is great, but if you pair it with cringe, it's just... I don't know. I've got really big reservations about this.
I'd love for us to kind of walk away and have our attitudes changed.
Yeah.
If you walk away hating it even more.
And you know what? I've watched episodes of this because when ABC 2 had that comedy period in the evenings, you'd put it on and just keep it on. And especially like years ago when I was traveling a lot for work, it was great because then, you'd go back to the hotel, you'd put on ABC 2 and you were locked in. And that got me onto so many of those shows at that time of night. And Peep Show was one of them. And I'd be watching it going, oh, I'm not coping with this. But you've got this and then you've got crap on every other station. Yeah. So this is what we're watching. You know? Yeah.
Our problem was always that the remote would run out of batteries.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, sorry, Mum. We would turn off The Simpsons and watch something age appropriate. The remote's got no batteries. I'm so sorry.
He's pulled out the battery.
Yeah. Anyway, shall we?
Okay, let's go. Let's go and watch Peep Show.
Cool. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was an exercise in pain, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was awful.
I don't know.
Lisa's run away. Yeah. She's just like, no, can't deal.
In the end, it was just this awkward after awkward after awkward. Just everything is awkwardness. And you're placed in the position of being in amongst
them. Yeah. And... also, seeing that part of you to the point where when they start kissing, they're just in.
That's so creepy.
I didn't like that style of film in the slightest. Like, I thought they were clever with it at points, having it from other points of views to allow you to see everything, but genuine hatred for it.
I like this shoe shop, you know, in the beginning. I thought it worked.
Yeah, I think that's the gimmick for the series, so they can't not do it.
But other shows do it really well, right? Where you see it from one point of view and another point of view, and then you get a whole wide shot. And I think that it's fun if it wasn't the entire show.
Yeah. There's some moments where I think the joke wouldn't have landed if it had been a wide shot.
Yeah, but that's where you kind of go, this is a wide shot.
Yeah,
and then this is a point of view shot sort of thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It really brought you into the awkwardness.
That was the fact. Even the format on its own is so unnatural that it feels awkward. You're just sitting there and watching an ordinary scene.
Yeah.
Even if nothing's happening.
All awkward. Yeah,
it was all
just
awkward.
Just sitting on the bus right next to each other.
Yes.
Where you're in each other's face.
Yes. Yeah. I love how they did that effect where it was like he's going, oh, he's going to hate it when I say that. And so then he says it and then it actually shows the camera pan that kind of awkward. Yeah. And I'm like, oh.
They used it well. Admittedly, they did use the format really well. Mm. Yeah, they used it cleverly, which is interesting because nothing else I've ever seen has used that format.
Yeah. But Lisa, it grabs my horror, you know, the same horror that you have of just these awkward situations where they're burying themselves deeper.
I have seen someone else use this format before and it reminded me so heavily of the people that use this format. There's a comedy trio of people who are also gamers and music people and everything, but they do these things called one-hour film challenges.
So they try
to make a film in an hour.
Like a short story thing.
Yeah, basically they get given a small brief and then they have to film it. There's no editing or anything like that. It's all on the go. Similar camera quality, but they do everything very, very similarly.
In terms of first person perspective.
Yeah, and so I was really enjoying it at the start because like you said, it was really well done. It was really clever, like, the way that they did use that perspective. It's just when it started getting more and more awkward, I couldn't.
Yeah.
I started looking up chairs because I need to replace my chair.
Yeah.
Just so I could seriously make that disconnect because I just couldn't.
That wasn't for your benefit. I was audibly losing my mind. Yeah. I'm just dropping all these four-letter words because I was just getting so... Yeah. I'm not coping with this.
So what we're saying is it's impactful. It has impact.
Oh, yeah. You really empathise with the characters.
Yes. Really empathise with the characters, yes. So it works in that regard. It really does put you in this awkward situation where you're stuck there.
But it's just that irredeemable, like, how do you get yourself from A to Z in just, you kind of go, what decision, like, why? Like, to the point where you got to the end and you're like going, holy crap, like, what do
you... It's showing you the internal monologue as well that's leading to those decisions.
Which is so clever.
Yeah. Yes.
Even David Mitchell's character wasn't quite understanding why he was doing these things and doing the things and then excusing them afterwards. Yeah. And it just...
That's very human, though. We do... Why do we do that?
The honesty of that inner monologue really works well, though, too. Because it's like, if you're looking at this from an outsider's point of view, you're like, why are you doing this? But then you know straight up, he's doing it because he is thinking about his pants and not his brain. You know, like, you can see. And it's obvious that that's what he's doing.
I did the Robert Webb one where it was like, I shouldn't tell this joke.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna lie. For that moment, I was like, "Wow, we're in Angus's mind."
I did a double take as well because I went, "Oh, that's the punchline," and then he did it.
Yeah.
It was like a double punchline.
Yeah.
I felt like even in the normal points, and this is probably what made it even more awkward, is where there was nothing going on in the scene. You're still getting that inner monologue at points, and I felt like it was too real. Like, he picked up a pair of shoes. I wrote this down very, very early on. He's like, oh, should I go brogues? And I looked at the shoes.
The
I'm
brown
like,
shoes,
they're not brogues.
I thought that. I wondered that because I've watched The Kingsman. I've learned what brogues are.
Yeah. No, I know what brogues are. I had to double check and I'm like, yeah, they're definitely not brogues. And he picked up just a plain pair of shoes, whereas brogues have got the intricate design over the top of
the toes.
Right. And so that was just wrong. And then I'm like, oh, but he's thinking it.
Yeah.
The amount of times that we would think and go, oh, no, I don't want this cream cheese, but it's actually like goat's curd or something like that. Yeah. We're just thinking wrong. And I'm like,
But you can just excuse that because you're thinking it.
Yeah, you're just thinking it. And he's not trying to showcase it to someone else or anything. When I walk into a shop, I'm immediately like, wow, I wish my sister was here. Because we'd pick out shirts and be like, oh, this would look great on you, sort of thing. Like, that's immediately what I think. And I'm like, this is too real a show. It doesn't even matter that it was uncomfortable and cringy. It was too real. The justification was too real.
And then that escalation was like, oh, I don't want to go crazy and get brown shoes. I better get black shoes because they're more sensible. And then it's like, oh, she's touching my feet. Oh, no.
But look at it from like a teenager's point of view, right?
He's
like,
not a teenager.
But if you look at it from a young person's point of view where you are physically starved of touch and then you see a guy that you like, who helps you as a cashier and your hands touch for that one moment and you're like, this is it, we could get married.
And everything starts
and everything just snowball effects and then you have that want and it was too real. Like, it really was. If you look at it from that touch starved point of view, maybe I'm closer to it because I'm younger than everybody here minus Angus, but I also had a normal life except for Angus, who stayed at home playing video games. I was out in the world and I legitimately was
the
like...
train museum, we discussed that.
I think you would do that type of thing in your teens and it was like...
I have done that thing as a 20-year-old.
You meet someone and you have a conversation and it's a great engaged conversation and the next minute you're imagining what it would be like to spend the rest of your life with that person and you're like... that was just a throwaway moment to that person.
Yeah.
Mark is a teenager in his head.
Yeah.
Most men at 25, I think, are like 23 to 20 years old, like mentally.
Emotionally, mentally much later than women.
Yeah. Still haven't got there.
No, we know.
Thanks.
But that's only because you're surrounded by betrayal.
To go to that moment and have that inner dialogue to the point where then a few days later you're bringing in a box of chocolates for the person who helped you pick out a pair of shoes.
Yeah, that's comedy at its core, right? They're pushing the narrative. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I went to a shoe store, and I have done this just in a completely different moment, if I go somewhere and I'm like, wow, I really like that person, I want to get to know them, like think about like the coffee shop scenario.
Yeah.
I'll go get another coffee because that seems normal. That's normal. I just want another coffee. I'm not going there to see that person. Oh, it's that person doing their shopping. I'm doing my own shopping. Maybe if I accidentally crash the cart. Like, that's normal. People crash carts with another person. Oh, we're purchasing the same thing. I can stand next to them because that's okay to purchase the same thing as them. But you don't want that same thing as them. You're doing it because they won't look into it. But it's okay. It's too real.
The problem is because we're living in large societies surrounded by strangers, it's actually not natural. We should be living in those small groups where we do know everyone, or it's so easy to get, if someone's a stranger, you immediately, oh, I haven't met you before. Who are you? Yeah.
Or stalker syndrome.
Yeah. I guarantee you everybody has done this at least once. And being able to connect with it at some point in time in your life.
But it's that comedy escalation.
Yeah, they have to push it.
Yeah. I've done that with people. Go, oh, we had this really great conversation. We had this great connection. This could be a friendship. We could be best friends. Next minute you're like, you're going, oh no. they were just being polite. It's that escalation. And I think it is the fact that you can put yourself in their shoes that makes it more painfully cringy because you're like, I could see how this could happen. I could go through that thought process, but where's the point where I would stop? What would I do in that situation? You know, hey, it seems really reasonable. Hey, look, the professor's asked us to go. Oh, this is another opportunity for us to chat. This is, you know, and it all, there's these things about it that just seem so reasonable until it isn't.
Also, thieving education, just that line, that moment was so funny because he's not wrong.
No.
Yeah. You could just walk in and be like, yeah, I'm not on the paperwork yet, but I've literally transferred the other day.
When I was at uni, you could just walk onto campus and just go to whatever lecture.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. You just needed to know where they were and when they were.
That's what I did. Cinema studies, and every Friday afternoon we'd have a film screening and then we'd discuss it. And I actually didn't know until writing group when Alex said, oh, yeah, we used to go in, all of us used to go and watch the films. Free film Friday afternoon. There were non-students there. No wonder there were so many.
And there were probably plenty of students that weren't doing the curriculum, were doing the curriculum that didn't turn up.
There were writing students that were like, yeah, there's a psychology building at this point. There's normally this much space free. And they would band together to work out how many people were going, and some of them were even sharing notes or something as well.
Yeah.
So, Angus, did you enjoy that?
No, I loathed every minute.
So you're like Baylor, you loathed every minute.
It was fun. I hated it, but it was fun. If that makes any sense. Well, it's a cringe comedy show, so yeah, that's kind of the goal, really, for the creators.
So the same with you? You just loathed it the same way? Or?
Genuinely, I was actually more disappointed. Because I thought it was going to be something that it wasn't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was expecting.
I felt like at the beginning when you were making comparisons to Leno and Woodley and that, I'm like, that's not what this is.
It wasn't the even that.
University Challenge episode.
There was no University Challenge.
That's the thing. I was genuinely expecting it to have a university, TV with Whose Questions on or something.
No, it's just, I don't know. It's just a clever title of the show.
It is just a clever title. Because the challenge was getting into April's pants for David Mitchell.
Or being able to perform on stage.
But genuinely, I was just disappointed that I missed out on that. So, yeah, you're right. It's nothing like Leno and Woodley. I was really hoping to see that classic challenge quiz where Albert Einstein was the same answer the entire time.
Being disappointed that expectations were not met is a very...
Also, no trains.
Yeah.
Only buses.
It was a bus.
Yeah.
Actually, the worst mode of transport, as far as I'm concerned. There's no...
Surely the worst mode of transport is the actual car, because it's like a bus, but let few people...
Car equals freedom.
Okay.
Bus... in amongst a whole heap of smelly people, and you can't breathe any different air, and oh my god, that would be the worst. That's thanks.
Yeah, like a train.
No. Train better.
Get up and walk around.
Yes. Yeah, Jeanette knows.
Walk around. I've travelled on a lot of those English buses because they were cheaper, a lot cheaper than trains.
Yeah.
It was a means of getting from A to B.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas a train would have been pleasant.
Today we found out that Jeanette's also autistic. She too likes the train.
So Lisa, personally, your personal view.
Oh, just... I struggled. The cringe was really real. And I'd like to apologise to everyone here for the amount of four-letter words that I dropped during that episode whenever Mark chose to do something that was completely unthinkable. I presume
Mark is David Mitchell's character.
I look like the idea of it. I just... can't do cringe comedy.
Yeah.
And I know it's not for everyone. And the amount of times that my dad's tried to tell me that I should watch the UK version of The Office, and I'm just like, I can't. You know, for that same reason.
So here's a question. There must be a personality type that really does like this. And it appears that, I mean...
it's almost like a schadenfreude humour, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, Cassandra, were you the same? Did you have that same sense of
cringe? Yeah, pretty much, It's also the fact that, I mean, I haven't really had that same experience as the characters in the show because I was not the person to go out and do stuff when I was younger. But it's definitely... I don't really empathise with why would you go to that extreme just to get your rocks off. So I don't really...
You can't really empathise.
Yeah, I can't really empathise with that. It's more just... my experiences are more... trying to work out why someone would do these ridiculous things just to hook it up with one person they maybe have a connection with. Like, I have connections with everybody, and I don't do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I would say if you did have a connection with these characters and any of the choices they made, then there's something wrong.
But it's more like, I don't know, it's not the person to do anything more extreme than just saying hello to somebody just to get laid.
Yeah.
I think because I'm... at core, quite an anxious person, and I'm always scared of doing and saying the wrong thing.
Oh, yes.
And I think when I see other people do it, I get that secondhand. If I was to do some of the things that they do in this episode, I'd just be like, I'd hide in my room.
Roll up in a ball.
Yeah, that's it. Curl up in a ball, or I'd just walk into the ocean until, you know, I'd stop.
That's the thing. Even if I thought some of those things, I'd be like an imposition and awkward and not belonging. And And why would I even think that, oh, no, this being nice, why would I expect to have a relationship with them and just drop it the second I'm thinking about it? Why even go back and say hello would be weird, let alone all the stuff that's...
That's it. Well, we talk about that, and it's like by the time you kind of get to a position where a normal person would go, hey, let's exchange numbers, I feel like we had a connection here, I'd completely rolled into a ball and completely convinced myself that they would want nothing to do with me, and I become completely avoidant. And that person's like, oh, I wonder why they're not talking to me now. Because I've just completely just shut it all down in my head. I don't think they show that spiral as well. I would have that overthinking spiral that they just don't have. They just
know.
God, I wish I could be like that. But
Also, there was no Olivia Colman in this episode.
She's I think that's who he was calling.
Sophie character.
So, Jeanette, personal view about this? Do you think you'd watch this again?
I think I'd like to see more episodes just to see why it is so popular. Because I feel that with comedy, one episode doesn't give you...
That's often true.
You've got to actually...
comedy, yeah.
Yeah, it's also...
takes me a while to get to know the characters, and it's not until I feel that I know the characters that I actually find the comedy funny. Yeah. So quite often I'll laugh a lot more with the comedy the second time I watch it than I did the first time.
That is true. I mean, it took me a while to get into Black Books, and in the end I thought that's one of the best comedies...
I like that there's an evolution in their writing as well. There's growth. They're not still just making another peep show with a different backstory, you know. And I've got to say, I prefer something like this to something like Upstart Crow. Controversial.
Okay. I absolutely love Upstart.
Yeah, I know you do. Yeah. But that's not written. That's written by Ben Elton.
That's it. Blackadder.
Yeah.
That's very Blackadder.
It is very Blackadder. Yeah. I appreciated it when I tried to watch it again about a year or so ago. But it is still very much that old school sitcom comedy. Whereas this was very revolutionary when it came out.
Oh, absolutely.
I just remember people just raving about it. It was a very much a new style. And I guess because since then, I'm trying to think of shows that have been like this. But yeah, it was kind of a dawn of a new era when it came to comedy writing instead of that kind of clunky sitcom, old school type style.
So this may be like eating Vegemite for the first time and deciding whether or not
balancing.
So is Vegemite
That's a very good bit of the episode because, if you're
new to Vegemite.
Yeah, it can be, But it's one of those things where you've got to develop a palate for it a bit.
But are we talking about eating Vegemite incorrectly or are we talking about eating Vegemite correctly and still going, not vibing it?
You know what? That's up for kind of how it's
talking of Vegemite
taken by the consumer.
I just have to comment on the booze that was featured in that episode.
Jacob's Creek.
Fosters.
I know, right?
Yeah, and that was the UK at the time.
It was, absolutely. Yeah. Australian wine and beer.
Just, were just...
Yeah.
And Jacob's Creek. It was always Jacob's Creek.
Literally half an hour down the road from this. But he was going, oh, this is the cheap stuff. I thought Jacob's Creek was a lot more expensive overseas than it is over here.
Compared to French wines, Australian wines are very cheap.
Ah,
which is why they really hit the market running, because cheap French wine was utter
gutter.
It was just vile. And then suddenly you've got
Spanish wine is the same.
Cheap Australian wine. It's quite drinkable.
And it's actually quite nice,
But he doesn't buy the Australian. He goes down a line and picks up something underneath the Australian wine.
So even cheaper again.
Yeah. So he goes cheaper again.
Yeah.
Foster's, interesting.
Mm. No one drinks Foster's in Australia.
No. Do you know why?
Is it different?
Because Foster's is an internationally distributed brand of Australian lager. It is, however, owned by the Japanese brewing company Asahi Group Holdings.
Yes, yeah.
So it's not even an Australian beer at all. It's marketed as Aussie.
It wasn't Asahi.
Not a lot of Australian beer is actually Australian, though.
Yeah.
Yes, I had a question for Baylor. I was going to ask if you think you would have appreciated that episode more if you didn't know the title, going back to what you talked about.
Yeah. No, I would not have.
Okay.
Because I would have assumed that it was doing something similar to Leno and Woodley, and they were in a way. It's just Leno and Woodley is a lot more comfortable and easier to digest.
Yeah.
And so even just with that as a backing, I still wouldn't have enjoyed it.
Okay.
Leno and Woodley's humour is that they use elements of slapstick and surprise humour and things like that. They don't do as much... They do a little, but not as much. They go as far with the cringe.
Yes. And the other thing is, as well, they very heavily have straight man, funny man, whereas this is... They've got the straight man, funny man, right? I know which is which... Yeah. But
the straight man is the funny man, and it's like it's on its head.
Yeah. They kind of alternate.
Yeah, but
they're trying to be straight and end up being funny, and then it causes a confusion and it jars.
Yeah.
I would argue that Webb's character is more classically straight man overall, and the other one is more funny man, and that is purely for the fact that, from my point of view, one has a smoother, softer sort of personality versus the other one who's like sharp like an arrow.
It goes back to that, and
that's where I think the straight man, funny man really comes into play. It's that personality type. It's that I'm always right. I'm this. I'm super cool. I'm in the band. I do everything in the band. Whereas the other one's I'm totally in this history class.
Yeah.
And that goes back to Odd Couple. That's an Odd Couple trope where you've got your very sensible, straight-laced, you know, and then you've got your slovenly, relaxed, casual.
And that's like,
he goes to buy the pair of brown shoes because he's like, I could go brown. And then he immediately pulls himself back and goes, no, I don't want to seem silly. I don't want to be ridiculous. No, I'll go with this straight, sensible pair of black shoes. Thank you very much. And he's policing his own... impulses and then immediately becomes a stalker. So it's you're really policing the wrong part of yourself.
Yeah.
That goes back to Michael in Arrested Development. It's like that really straight character and then just does these kind of problematic things but justifies it because it's like, I'm the sensible one, I'm the straight one, they're the crazies, I'm the one who's got everything under control, I look after everyone else, and then just does something really horrific and then you don't think about it because you're like going, no, he's the one that's in control, you know?
He's the sensible one, compared to everybody else, he's the sensible one.
Right through it, in all of the series I've seen Mitchell and Rebbe in, that same dichotomy underlies, even though they're different characters, but it's that same underlying dichotomy.
Yeah, it works. That's very much what Lena and Woodley do, and that's what a lot of comedy is kind of based around, is the straight man, funny man. Mm-hmm. It just depends on how they decide to push that, because by the end of Lena and Woodley, I guess spoilers in a way, is that you begin to realise that it toys with the straight man, funny man, right? It pushes Colin to be more aggressive, angry, and stupid in how he reacts to Frank, and Frank seems to be the more policed. Well, I don't actually agree with what you're saying. I'm not the bad guy here, sort of thing. And so it still has that Mitchell and Webb kind of, they do kind of flip roles. Like when you see one being so straight that they're more the funny guy and the other one being so funny that they're kind of policing the situation. It is very similar in that case, but I prefer the way that Lena and Woodley do things versus Mitchell and Webb.
Yeah.
I think. At least in this situation. Yeah.
It's hard to judge with just one episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't need more episodes. I'm pretty sure I've actually seen it.
It'd be good to see more episodes where we're seeing more through Webb's eyes, because a lot of this was dictated through Mitchell's eyes.
Yeah.
So then they showed when Webb came in to the party at the university, they still showed that all through Mitchell's eyes. And I'm like, it'd be interesting because he literally came in and went, I've had a really shit night. They've bumped me from the band. So you're here at a party and you're doing really well. So I'm just going to self-destruct this party. Like, I'm going to make sure that you have a really bad time so I can get you out and we can go home. You know?
The other thing is as well, you said early on that Mitchell's character self-polices. Webb's character does not. While he is the straight man, he's too impulsive. He goes, "Ha, this would be funny. Let's go. Let's just dive into that.
Let's just do it.
Whereas Mitchell's character is more like, no, let's not do that. And even though he is the funny man, he's still more reserved. And I think that's kind of the role of the funny man, is that the straight man kind of is supposed to be a bit too abrasive and a bit too not controlled, whereas the funny man kind of is supposed to be a bit more, a little bit less, I think.
So wait, who are you calling the straight man in this situation?
Robert Webb.
You're calling Robert Webb the straight man?
Yeah.
I would have pinned them completely opposite.
Yes. No, I agree with Baylor. And I think he always plays the straight man, if you think about
Robert
it.
Robert Webb.
Yes, in everything where the two of them are.
Look at Manny and Bernard. Bernard is so impulsive and angry and snap. And I feel like that reflects very heavily in the way that Webb reacts, just from that one episode. Yeah. Whereas Manny is more like, I won't do that because I know that'll annoy him, kind of thing. Like, he's a bit more reserved. He's a bit more policed.
Yeah.
But he is still the funny man in between the two of them because of that personality style. He's softer, less abrasive. Yeah, okay, they still have moments where they flip the script and they mismatch and there's arguments to say that Manny could be the straight man in some episodes, but it's very much Manny is funny man. So David Mitchell's character is funny man. Woodley's character is funny man.
I see more parallels between Bernard Black and David Mitchell's character than Manny.
No, I don't either.
And it's almost like the straight man, if something goes wrong, it's usually an outside force, whereas, I guess, the comedy relief, something goes wrong, it's usually due to his own, you know. So it is interesting, like, they really circumvent those characters. I really do think as well that as actors, and I've not seen them in a lot of other stuff, but I feel like they both have the versatility to be able to do both with just a little bit of tweaking. They could change their dynamic. I don't, and you can correct me, but I feel like it's not like they're going to be doing the same type of comedy. It's almost like they could take it in turns on who is the quirky one, who's the funny one, who's the straight-laced one. Yeah. They could go either way. If I compare it to something like the characters from Mighty Boosh, and I know we've not done that, you know, you've got Julian and Vince. Vince can always only play that weird, funny, quirky guy, and Julian is always slotted into that straight man, and even when he is strange, it's like a subdued kind of strange. So I think if they did ever other stuff together, they would always be stuck in that.
Okay, so I am looking at the difference between the two comedy styles. So you've got double act, and then you've got comedic foil. The difference is comedic foil is straight man, funny man, and the double act is when both comedians play on their own personalities. Yes, so, yeah, very easy to kind of mix the two of them together. Yes. I do genuinely think that they hold quite a lot of the comedic foil, the straight man, funny man.
And they kind of switch it around.
They subvert it because I think they try to be the comedic foil, but they're actually a double foil.
I think they're a double act.
Yeah. It's almost like they're showing us that they're one way, but they are actually another way. Yeah. That is clever. They are clever. Yeah. It's a clever show.
Yeah.
Clever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've done the food type.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's the score?
What?
Oh, God, do we know that the score's
wrong? I have it,
Oh, God, so you want a number?
Judges.
I can't do it.
You know what?
Do the maths. Come on, Angus, do the maths.
I didn't quite mind this as much as some would say. So I'll call it 2 to the power of 3 out of 11. There you go.
Okay, so it's a bit less.
Maybe out of 12. Yeah, out of 12.
Okay, so, so it's about 2/3.
I guess that's the Cult TV Club for today. We'll see you next month.
Until then.
Do we have a plan? Is there a plan? No plan.
No plan.
No plan.
Okay. Bye.
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 Bye.